Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Back at the old stand here on the Paracast, we have Tim Swartz with us. I don't know if we mentioned this before, but one of our occasional guests, Linda Godfrey, had died recently. Had you heard of that, Tim?
We talked about it a couple episodes ago.
That's good. I'm glad we got a chance to do that because we're losing these people like flies.
I know.
They're just disappearing, and it's really bad, really bad. Oh, by the way, here, we had a question, actually had an encounter with a guest where I brought to her attention the fact that MJ-12 was suspicious. That was Debbie Ziegelmeier. She's the diver person who works with MUFON. And she wasn't aware of it. And then when I brought it to her attention, she never responded. And I thought, hey, maybe she doesn't like us anymore because we disagreed with her. And it turns out she had some medical issues to deal with. She sent me a very nice letter. Yeah, well, she's fine now, apparently. But, you know, we all have medical issues.
Mm. Well, I'm glad to hear she's doing all right.
Yeah, so it's good to hear. And if we said anything bad about her, we never apologize for anything. No, that's someone else does that. No, we're sorry. We don't want to mention who does that because it's not fair. Mm-hmm. Okay, Philip Kinsella joins us. And we've got an interesting book of his that we want to look at right now. And it's called Sky Crash Throughout Time, subtitle UFOs, The Reptilian Man, and Strange Mysteries Surrounding Rendlesham. Philip, welcome back to the Paracast.
Thank you very much indeed, Gene and Tim. I'm very honored to be on board. Thank you.
All right. You had this book originally published in 2013. Is this new edition different or what?
Well, there are some updates within the original edition, and one of those was the subtitle. When I had first originally decided to write the book with the co-author, Brenda Butler, the book emphasized the fact that it was looking into more of the mysteries surrounding Rendlesham Forest. And, of course, as you know, in England, here in Suffolk, the American unit was here in the 1980s, and that's when things kicked off with a UFO sighting or several UFO sightings. And subsequent to that, when Cappelbaum Publishing brought the book out in 2013, it had quite a ribbing from a lot of people because they expected to hear about Colonel Charles Holt, Penistone and Burroughs, and other things that occurred on the base. But it was actually an examination of UFOs seen around Suffolk and certainly around Rendlesham before 1980 and much afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah, Rendlesham, the whole UFO incident that occurred there, I think a lot of people don't realize that that wasn't the only one, that there had been all kinds of different activity in that area for a number of years.
Oh, yes. Yeah, most definitely. And rather like Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, you'll find these certain geographical locations that seem to be a magnet for areas of high strangeness. And I will explain to you an incredible encounter that we, when I say we, I mean myself, my twin brother, and a good friend of ours, Susan, had experienced on the 8th of June 1998 at the forest. And we had quite a number of very bizarre occurrences that defied human explanation. But certainly, yes, you're right, Tim and Gene, the area itself promotes levels of high strangeness, and this is what we wanted to look into. Fortunately or unfortunately, when you get involved with a famous UFO case, whatever it may be, like Roswell or anything like that, you'll invariably find that there are many differences of opinions. But we actually went out and we did our field study there for just within 10 years, around 10-year mark. And so, you know, at least I can say, along with my brother and Susan, that we were there, that we saw the activity with our own eyes. And contrary to popular belief, with a lot of suggestions, especially on Wikipedia, that say for a fact that, you know, it was the Orford Ness Lighthouse that the good American military were chasing, well, God help all of us if the military mistake the beams from the Orford Ness Lighthouse, which is no longer operational, and we had seen it, was responsible for all this bending of light UFO activity, which it certainly wasn't. You can throw that suggestion right out the window. But you'll see, unfortunately, the promoted narrative from the system that we serve that indicates categorically that nothing happened at Rendlesham, that it was all something that can be explained, but we beg to differ. I have to make a point in stating that most definitely.
Well, I think that John Burroughs' doctor might also disagree with that assumption.
Oh, yes, absolutely, and also with Jim Peniston. And I think it's fair to assume that all of us as researchers, yourselves included, trying to find the answer, we still come up with a blank page. But I think the singularity itself appears to promote levels of high strangeness, whatever it is. People call them UFO, or now the new acronym UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. The systems try to make it more scientific within this approach to the department. It was quite strange. I think the singularity seems to affect individuals on a personal level of psychic integration. And this may be why a lot of people in the center of a UFO activity do experience different things, or at least perhaps they translate them differently. But I certainly do agree with you there that John Burroughs' doctor would disagree there, and certainly the whole episode of the famous 1980 event that occurred on the night of the 26th, 27th, and 28th, although they did go into the morning of the 27th, 28th, and 29th, a three-night episode of UFO activity. But what a lot of the public don't understand, as you quite rightly stated, is that it's not just this event that was spectacular in nature. It's almost like Skinwalker Ranch in the sense that this area promotes levels of high strangeness, and not just UFO activity either. So, I absolutely agree with you there.
I should point out that we did invite Brenda Butler to join us on the show today, but unfortunately she had a prior engagement and couldn't be with us. So I'm sorry that we couldn't have her along for the conversation, Philip.
No, that's fine. And we did try all our best. As I said, you know, when writing the book Sky Crash itself was very difficult without treading on certain toes. But also the fact that, you know, Brenda wanted the book to be called Life on the Move, but that sounded more like a travel book. And, of course, when you're writing a book on UFOs, it has to have a title that emphasizes the point categorically. I did meet Brenda, however, under the most strangest circumstances, and this also brings in levels of synchronicity within all of our lives. I remember as a kid reading about the revelation of this UFO activity over Rendlesham, slightly exaggerated but less understood at the time, in the national newspapers. And then all those years later, finding myself, you know, me, little me, in the midst of this activity, and then connecting with one of the original investigators, Brenda Butler, who must be credited with the first original book that blew the case open in 1984, a book that was called Sky Crash, A Cosmic Conspiracy, published by Neville Spearman Limited. Now, Brenda Butler, Dot Street, and Jenny Randalls, who is here in England, a prominent ufologist, wrote that book. And, of course, it created a lot of waves. And I know that the three women had a lot of problems in getting the book out to the public. And certainly, I think some establishments wanted it to be buried. So go forward many, many years later. And then, of course, I met Brenda Butler, not knowing where she was in the world, while I was investigating in Rendlesham Forest. And she had been in a copse of trees. You'll laugh at this. My brother and myself and Susan saw these flashing lights in the darkness of the forest. And Rendlesham Forest is a huge place. It can be quite scary if you get lost, because you need to know where you are.
You know, a lot of people don't know where they are. But we don't want to go into that, because then we're insulting people, and that would be keeping with the reputation for the PowerCast over the past 16 years. Seriously, Philip is here, Tim is here, Gene is here, so to speak. You're in
the PowerCast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire PowerCast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the PowerCast. After the PowerCast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the PowerCast Plus. With After the PowerCast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the PowerCast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with PowerCast guests. With PowerCast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the PowerCast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about PowerCast Plus.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam, works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W., 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the PowerCast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous PowerCast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Philip and Gene and Tim, we continue. We're looking over the latest iteration of Sky Crash throughout time. Philip Kinsella, please continue your discussion.
Yeah, we'd seen these flashing lights in this copse of trees one particular night, and we thought, oh, that looks like a UFO. But no, we were disappointed, because when we went further, I saw this lady with this white Alsatian and a gentleman. And they were playing some meditation music, and they were taking pictures using flash photography. And when we approached, they appeared quite guarded. We said, you know, how are you, and all the rest of it. And we made our way. And I had this compulsion to go back to the lady. And when I approached her, I said, are you looking for the orbs? And she stood up and she said, yes, why? And I said, well, I was rather hoping to meet Brenda Butler. And she said, my dear, I am Brenda Butler. So that is how I met her. And through our continuing research into the forest, I gained her trust into finding out more of what was going on around the area, and something that she had documented for many years, because she was actually not only just one of the original investigators, but she had been good friends with a lot of the American personnel on base at the time and surrounding the events of 1980 concerning the UFO activity that occurred there. Although she's, you know, she's very black and white and very straight-laced, she has a remarkable, you know, archive of information that she's documented. And so I thought, well, you know, why don't we get together and write this book? And then, of course, it was called Sky Crash Throughout Time. As I said, we had to change the subtitle in the new edition that Philip Mantle, British ufologist here in England, because he runs his Flying Disc Press, we felt that it was much better for us to change the subtitle so that a lot of readers didn't get confused by what the book was all about. Mind you, there is always the back cover, the blurb that you can read. And we found ourselves, again, with a lot of, not with this new release, but with a lot of controversy from other ufologists or those that have all the answers. I will make it plain and clear, we don't have any answers. In fact, all we have is a blank sheet of paper. But we can talk about the experiences, and we can kind of like summarize that the area of Suffolk, Rendlesham, certainly within the Twin Bases, and if you go there, it's really quite spooky, because there's been a lot of reports of rumbling coming from underground, which we have experienced. There is strange light activity. There was even an occasion, I'll tell you, where we had set up base camp. There is an outer region to the forest called Capel Green, and it was in Capel Green, which is a big farmer's field, and the farmhouse is directly in front, way across from the field. At this particular point, we set up camp and laid a blanket out. At that time, I did smoke. I went off for a smoke, and my brother went off for a smoke, and when we came back, Susan, myself, from Ronnie, only about 20 minutes, someone had laid out on our blanket a dead rat and a dead rabbit, fresh, and they were positioned in a circle so that the nose from one was touching the tail to the other, and vice versa in this circle. And we found that very disturbing, and knew that, you know, someone was watching us, or had been watching us, tracking us. We also had a lot of military helicopter activity that was kind of like, as unbelievable as it was trying to flush us out of the forest. And remember, this is public land, late at night, and the helicopters would come so low above the treetops to intimidate us. And on one occasion, we decided to go back to the car. We drove the car down out of the base towards an area where we could hide it. Susan and I decided to walk up to the base, and we saw a huge convoy of vehicles with blacked out windows going into this base that is supposed to be no longer in use. So we didn't know what that was about. And there are many other occasions that I personally have been involved in with regards to that. And of course, the UFO on the 8th of June 1998 at exactly 10:15 p.m. at night, and I'll explain that a little bit later as we get into the narrative. So, yeah.
You know, I'm interested here in a couple of things. When we get to Rendlesham, the UFO incident from 1980, before we get into all the side effects that you're bringing to our attention, we have a book here from a guy named George Wingfield. Don't know if you know him. It's called The Rendlesham Forest UFO Mystery and Project Honey Badger. And his main point is that the phenomenon in Rendlesham involves something conventional. There wasn't something unusual or paranormal. And I think some people relate that to a UFO encounter in the U.S., the Cash Landrum episode.
Oh, yes, I know of, yes, I remember that case.
Okay, so they kind of resemble each other in that people getting close to the presumed craft got sick, got ill effects as a result. Now, I don't know. Maybe, you know, the government has been doing some funky things with regard to testing new aircraft, and I hear you laughing, so therefore you agree with me or think I'm completely nuts.
No, I agree with you because we don't know. We have to be open to all forms of conjecture. We can't just literally say, oh, it's this or it's that. But my argument would be, when we had the experience on the 8th of June 1998, I doubt very much that military personnel would expend a lot of effort into making us believe that we were seeing a projection of a UFO in some kind of holographic nature. There would be no point in that. And certainly if they were developing some kind of new latest technology, they would have made sure that the area was cleared before they allowed the experiment to take place. I mean, I've heard this before about super secret weapons technology, holographic imagery, this type of thing, which sounds absolutely awesome. And, you know, I think that looking at that and then taking into account the Orphanus Lighthouse theory, and then, of course, the satellite theory and the prank that was supposedly done by the SAS to fool the Americans to get back at them and to, you know, making them believe that they put these black balloons with helium and lights on them. Well, none of these objects were found within the forest. But it's certainly an idea to contemplate.
Tim,
when did Brenda Butler first get involved in the whole Rendlesham incident?
Well, when she was a child. I mean, she had her first experience when she was a child with her parents, and she had a UFO encounter herself, even to the point where the police had been involved and where an object had landed close to the proximity of her place of where she lived, her residence, where there were holes in the ground. So I think and feel that, you know, from that point onwards, she just found herself connected with a lot of individuals who reported UFO sightings, and she was also into the paranormal as well. And she had her own group that she set up in later years. And so this is how she got involved with and friendships with a lot of the Americans on the base leading up to the point of the 1980 event, because her partner then was a musician and used to play in the bands. So she'd go along to the clubs and, you know, see the good old swings of those times. So she'd been involved with it for a very long time. But I think that, you know, what happened is that, you know, people didn't realize, they just felt that the Deputy Base Commander, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt, who I have met and is an esteemed character, we had a meal with him, very on the ball, along with Jim Peniston. I've seen Burroughs speak, but I've never met him personally.
We're going to break now with Philip and Jean and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. There was fatal gunfire in Atlanta on Saturday. Police said two teenagers were killed. Authorities are investigating the circumstances of the violence. Three people were killed in a house fire in Pittsburgh on Saturday morning. Firefighters were able to rescue 10 people from the building. A famous Los Angeles mountain lion is dead after being compassionately euthanized on Saturday. The animal, known as P-22 or the Hollywood Cat, was found suffering severe injuries and chronic health problems after vehicles struck him. He was put down at the San Diego Zoo. The mayor of El Paso is declaring a state of emergency in response to a surge of migrants entering the city. During a Saturday news conference, Mayor Oscar Lisa announced there are hundreds and hundreds of migrants in the city. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
We actually did an interview with Burroughs where he came to a place I was living. We had the interview done right then and there. I handed him a mic. I set him up on the mixer, and he proceeded to tell us everything. And he was pretty nice about everything. He did a promotional announcement for us and everything. And then more recently, maybe a year or two ago, he comes out with a book about Mendelssohn. Okay,
oh, yes.
That's cool. Send me a copy of the book. Why don't you? Which is normal. You know, we're reviewing a book, maybe having him on the show. And he says, no, you must buy it.
Oh.
Okay, well, I guess it's why we haven't heard from him since.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I never, ever in any way say to someone, buy my book. I've never done that, and I never will. I think it's up to the individual. If they want to buy it, that's fine. But I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, it's unfortunate because I understand, obviously, you want to make money from the book, be paid for what you did, be paid for your work. That's fine. The problem here is that when you're dealing with the media, you got to prepare to give out some free copies.
Oh, yes, now, absolutely, yeah.
Otherwise, you know, they're not going to buy every book they're offered to discuss. No one has that budget. Coast to Coast AM, maybe, but nobody else.
Yes, I mean, I've always been willing, but Philip Mantle, you see here, sends out copies, review copies, if anyone asks. So we've never had a problem ourselves. Of course, it's all to do with advertising. And incidentally, we don't make a lot of money from the books that we write. And I know that we've been criticized saying, oh, you're just jumping on the bandwagon to make a bit of cash for yourself. But seriously, it is not the case with myself or, you know, other researchers. It's a passion and a drive to get the information out there. You would normally find that if you send the information out there free to people, they can be bothered with it. They tear it to pieces. At least within the area of publishing, which is decades decades old. You know, you've got your work out there, and it kind of like, you know, promotes you and your story and telling the people of what you've experienced. But, you know, I've never had any issues with telling people to, you know, that they must go out and buy a copy. I have heard this with some other researchers and authors I won't name here, and I've heard stories about that, so I'm sorry.
Well, here's the deal also. I think people don't always understand the economics of writing a book, because they see these people going on TV and lecture tours, making millions of dollars. They sell it to Hollywood. They are reeling in the cash and everything. Most books, just like most musicians, you even have recordings out. Most book authors, most musicians do not make anything near a living wage from their work.
Yeah, that's right. And I can assure you, I'm not living in a mansion and I don't have a chauffeur.
He quit last week, let me tell you. The guy quit last week. He said, you know, I can't work for less than £2,000 an hour.
Well, you have to have a rudimentary sense of humor with it as well, I suppose. I guess that's normal. But I think you'll know, you know, those legitimate people that you're speaking to or you're connecting with. And I know that within any department of investigations, especially ufology, you'll have those with their ups and their downs, and those who want the red carpet and the accolades, and those who are ardent, dedicated researchers. So, you know, that I do understand that, yeah.
So for some of our listeners who maybe have been hiding under a rock since 1980, perhaps you could give us a brief description, good luck with that, on just exactly what happened at Rendlesham on the nights of starting, I guess, on the 27th of December, 1980.
Yes. Well, apparently on the first night, on the 20s, well, it was in the early hours of the morning when it went into the morning, was that the deputy base commander, Colonel Charles Holt, had a call to say that several of his men had seen what they thought, first of all, was a plane coming down in part of the forest, because there was a lot of flashing, and they thought that an aircraft had come down and was on fire. And, of course, two of those gentlemen was Jim Peniston and John Burroughs. And they had been given permission to go out of the base and to go and investigate, which led them to an area where Peniston had come into contact with a very strange-looking triangular-shaped craft that was like flat, not just up, but rather like a small stealth bomber, I suppose. And it was black with, you know, flashing kind of like symbols on it that's coming in from inside. And he felt that when he approached the object, he started to become tired and sluggish. As he touched the object, he had what they call a series of binary codes downloaded to him. Now, at the same token, Burroughs had seen something slightly different. He was seeing this light that he couldn't explain. And, of course, this occurrence was taking place for quite some time. And when they reported back to their base commander when the object had taken off, they went in to investigate and found that most of the branches, and there were some indentations in the ground, along with a slight radiation readings. But it's really interesting to note that on the 29th, because there was a slight gap, Deputy Base Commander Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt was told, informed that the lights were back, and he and his men got ready and got themselves packed in some trucks with light alls. They went into the forest, and they encountered this strange light that looked like a burning sun that was melting and moving through the trees, and his light then exploded and then split into three parts or three objects. And they found that these lights were then beginning to fire beams of light onto the ground and around the men, even to the point where one of the lights had gone over to the base and was starting to flash beams of light onto the secret weapons storage facility, which had obviously, you know, would have created some panic, alarm. And we must remember also that there was another chap as well too, Gary Baker, who worked within the radar facilities and had actually recorded these objects. They'd actually tracked them, but then they reckoned that the men came in and took those recordings away. So, you know, we have different variations and different stories from different people. And of course, unfortunately, Rendlesham is tied up, like Roswell, with so much controversy, it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff. It's very difficult to do. And you'll find that with certain individuals who had their experiences, I'm not talking about Penniston or Burroughs here, but others, you'll find conflicting testimony. But I can assure you that when you hear the actual story from Penniston and also Colonel Charles Holt, they are of sound mind and they know what they're talking about. And I think and feel that this is what led to the secrecy of obviously the famous Holt memo that went out, that was leaked. That was supposed to have been hidden. And, of course, the Office of Special Investigations, the OSI, was supposed to have gone in and spoken to members of the American military. And we hear all sorts of horrible things that occur there. So, you know, I do believe that something other than a normal terrestrial event occurred there. Other people will tell you, no, it's this or it's that. But as I said, when I went into the air and started investigating, you know, who am I? You know, and I did have quite a lot of backlash in bringing the book out or stating that, you know, people need to know what happened before and afterwards. And, of course, our experiences, which categorically proves that the era does have some level of high strangeness. So, in a nutshell, that's what happened. But as you guys know, with Roswell, of course, that becomes, you know, so huge and wide, and then everyone else gets involved. And I didn't want to go in there with that attitude. I was more interested in going to see what this was all about and to explore this territory, because we were only 2-hour drive away from the area from where we are here in Bedford to Suffolk. It's only 2-hour drive, so it was ideal. I suppose it's no different from someone, if the, I know you can't go to Skinwalker, but you know, to go and have a look around, or Area 51.
Hey, we're going to break now. We're not going to Area 51 today.
Nope.
Tim, Gene, and Philip, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Thank you.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do yourself a favor. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers, there's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Hello, this is John Burroughs, one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham UFO incident. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
During a trip once to Las Vegas area, we did drive out from the city, my wife and I, and we came close to Area 51.
Oh.
But there, I think there, you know, it's a kind of a tourist trap, the area outside of it. So there you go.
Yeah, Rendlesham is not a tourist attraction site. It does promote a lot of walkers, dog walkers, cyclists, that type of thing. But I don't think it has the same emphasis as rather like Area 51 or perhaps Skinwalker Ranch, because it hasn't had that too big a connection with it linked to, like, you know, series documentation and that type of thing, because everyone's been a bit tight-lipped about it. But clearly it indicates that the area itself is very strange, and you know, this is why we wanted to go there to examine it. It was very interesting. You know, a lot of things. There was one occasion where we were walking down the main track to the gates of the military base, Bent Waters. And we heard this sound. It was very much like something organic, heavy, that had slammed down onto the ground not far from where we were standing. And, of course, if you take incidences within Skinwalker Ranch, or certainly in areas of the national forests, when you hear a lot of these encounters with cryptids, most notably the Sasquatch and also the Dogman, you know, such sounds are heard. So I'm not making things fit here, but I can assure you that when we heard that sound on that particular occasion, we didn't want to hang around because it was getting quite late. And it's all very well me relaying something through words that, you know, don't carry any memories or emphasis. But when you are actually in the nest of the activity when it occurs, you know, it's a very different thing. And, you know, I have got my feet firmly planted on the ground. I don't, you know, drift off with the fairy, so to speak. But I can assure you, it's very strange that these occurrences occur or start to happen when it becomes, you know, twilight and everything starts to calm down. And, of course, you know, there was another event that occurred where we had experienced a spectacular UFO there in its full glory on the 8th of June 1998 at 10:15 p.m. at night. And that is quite bizarre within itself, because I wanted to work out whether or not, you know, is this phenomenon connected to us consciously, or is there some integration of consciousness on our level? I wanted to work out whether or not this was possible. So this is why we performed an experiment. It has been documented before in the past. Unfortunately, the main event of 1980 is the pinnacle event, because it was linked with military personnel. And of course, anyone who is not linked with some kind of badge stuck to them or some kind of like lead in life, it doesn't seem to be applicable, does it? But I can only talk from experience.
Ooh, why don't you give us some more detail about your own UFO experience?
Yes, well, it is. Well, on the 8th of June 1998, a week prior to that, when we had been doing our investigations in the forest, I heard a song on the radio, Karen Carpenter, calling occupants, And I thought, I wonder if that was possible. I wonder if we could do that just as an experiment. And people laugh now. And, of course, going back to 1996, I had an article published called Spirits in the Material World, trying to integrate consciousness and to see whether or not, the UFO activity is interdimensional in nature along with consciousness. So a week before we went to the forest, we set the date. And we meditated. We did a little circle, me, Ronnie, and Susan, and we sent out our thoughts to them, whoever they are, what they are, to say we're going to the forest. We're not going to take any equipment with us, recording equipment. We just want to see them if that's possible. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, that's a cop-out. You've got to bring evidence. Well, whatever evidence you bring to the table, unfortunately, will be continuously refuted. You know, even if you, let's just suppose and say here that you had a piece of the alleged Roswell spacecraft or the crash ship, whatever. Let's just suppose you showed it to someone. They wouldn't believe it. So we did the experiment, and on the 8th of June 1998, we had gone into the forest. It was a beautiful night. The stars were out. It was a clear night, and the moon was out. And we had gone into the area of the Capel Green, the farmer's field, where allegedly a lot of this activity had occurred with the lights going back to 1980 with the American military. So we found a spot that we thought was applicable. At this particular point in time, half of the field was just dust and dirt, and the other half was crop. And we were rather cautious of going into the farmer's field because, you know, he's known to come out and fire off a gun to try and scare off people quite rightfully entering his field. The time was roughly around about 9:30, 25 to 10 at this point, and we sat in a circle, and yes, we meditated. Isn't that crazy? But that's exactly what we did. At 7 minutes past 10, when we finished our meditation, we didn't know if we'd been heard. I mean, we just wanted some evidence of them. We suddenly caught sight of a red light to begin with that seemed to be coming from the farmer's house. And we thought, first of all, that we'd been clocked, that he'd seen us in his field and was getting in a car. And as we started to draw back to the edge of the forest, or going into the forest as it was, because it's a bit hard to explain where it seems to go round the farmer's field, as we were entering back into the forest to take cover, I stopped and realized that a car light isn't red, and there was only one of them. So as we look back, we saw this light approaching. It seemed to be like a catheter wheel going round and round, Catherine wheel, going round and round and round, and then it shot very quickly and very fast into the area where the crop was growing. And we thought that was exactly at 7 minutes past 10. We thought that was it. However, as we were standing there looking and using our binoculars to see if we could see this light, further down into the area of the forest where the farmer's crop was growing, there were some huge trees. There was a flash of light above one of these trees. It was an intense flash of light, and there was an incredible object. It was like a pyramid with a gap and a circular undercarriage beneath it. It made no sound. The top half of the pyramid-shaped object started to move one way, and the circular undercarriage, the appendage, started to move the other. So it was like clockwork. The lower part of the object had a bank of blue lights around it. The top object had all this light coming from it, from within its core. As I said, it made no sound, and I couldn't believe what we were looking at. It looked like some ornate machine. So I get the binoculars and have a good look at it. Ronald, my twin, gets the binoculars, and Susan does, and then I start to take off towards it. And as I'm starting to run towards it, I'm shouting back, tell me that it's a pyramid, tell me that it has a circular undercarriage, because I wanted to confirm that what I was seeing was the same as what Susan and Ronald were seeing. And I started to run through the crop that was wetting my jeans, because obviously the dew from the plants, but I wasn't concerned about that. I was more interested in getting closer to this object and looking at it. And as I got closer and closer, I realized at that point that I couldn't work out what it was I was looking at, except that it was a pyramid-shaped object with a circular appendage. It was quite big, and as I got underneath it and tripped, it just went out as though someone had turned out the lights, and I fell onto the ground and took a lot of dirt into my mouth, spat it out, and then I laughed And then I cried because I thought, my God, this is incredible. And of course, from that moment, we were stunned. We hung around for about an hour. Nothing else occurred. Examined the area. There was nothing. There were no aliens, I'm afraid. And when we got back to bed for the next morning, I contacted UFO magazine. We were told by an editor to create a full report, and that his editor, who gave me the name of Breen Forbes, told me that he would send the information to Peter Robbins. He had no idea that I knew Peter Robbins, or I didn't understand why he would think that Peter Robbins would want the information. So we sent the information, all of it, and a few months later, I didn't hear anything, and I phoned the magazine up. And they said they had no editor of the name of Breen Forbes. And I thought, well, there's no conspiracy here. This is ridiculous. They were the magazine that I sent the information to. Where has it gone? What's happened to it? So that was the experience that we had on the 8th of June, 1998, at precisely 7 minutes past 10 and 15 minutes past 10. Again, you know, people say, oh, it's because the military were projecting holographic, you know, images for you to believe that you were seeing UFOs. So what would the point be in that? We're three, and excuse my French here, but relatively unimportant individuals, you know, to trick us into believing we were seeing a UFO. What a waste of time. And people say to us, it was an optical illusion. No, it was not an optical illusion. I can assure you as fact, as God is my witness, that is exactly what we saw. And it was quite spectacular within its nature, but we've never seen anything like that since. Never.
You're going to see this for a couple of minutes, and then we'll hear from Philip Kinsella. And Gene Steinberg and Tim Swartz are in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.